From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of June, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke will join us to discuss cash rents, the cost of seed corn this fall, and Arken PLC payments from last fall's harvest for corn, soybeans, and wheat. A hint, only one of those three crops is likely to get a payment. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll do a quick review of what was an historical spring as it relates to the weather in the United States. Oh, and right now, I'll remind you to dial this number, 217-244-9455. We're coming up on the end of our fiscal year here at Illinois Public Media. That's tomorrow, June the 30th. And tomorrow, of course, USDA report day as well. But for our purposes today, June the 30th is important because it's the time when WILL needs to have everything in the bank that it will spend in the coming year. If we don't have it, we don't spend it. Most places don't do their budgets that way, but that's how WILL does it. And we could sure use your help right now, 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. Either way, make that pledge. I kind of like the $120 level. Add to your pledge if you've already made one. And thank you for making sure that Illinois Public Media can bring you agricultural programming. And when you talk to somebody at 217-244-9455 or you get to the comments section at willpledge.org, do let them know you're pledging in support of agriculture.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today up 19 cents, settled at $6.94.5. December at $5.48.5, a penny and a quarter higher. July beans 2 3/4 higher, finished at $13.59 3/4. The November 13.12.5, down 2.5. And bean oil futures were up $1.84. The bean meal down $3.20. Wheat futures July soft red 6 1/4 lower at $6.39 3/4, and the hard red at $6.19 up 1 for the day. Spring wheat 24 lower at $8.18.5. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead option at $121.92.5, up 32.5 cents. Feeders at $157.40, $1.05 higher, and lean hogs were 85 cents higher at $103.62.5 for 100 pounds. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. I don't know whether it matters, Wayne, so much what happened in Chicago as the fact that tomorrow's USDA report day, and most people, I suspect, are kind of standing aside and just waiting it out. However, the July corn really made a rally today.
Yes, it did. We touched $7 again today. Now we backed off and closed at $6.94.5, but you know, still some real good backing behind that. And I think if you try to buy cash corn, you can't buy it for $6.94 or $7. A lot of guys, their bid is not on that anymore, but they are still above that. And I think there was zero registrations as far as the for delivery on the July corn also.
That's probably going to make people that have been holding on really happy and want to continue to do so. I'm not sure that in the face of tomorrow's USDA report, acreage and grain stocks, that that's an awfully good idea. I could very well be wrong.
You know, at 11 o'clock tomorrow, we'll have an idea whether we're right or wrong. But, you know, for right now, boy, is this a rebound from what we sold off. And I mean, to get back to where you can get seven with a seven in front of your corn for your old corn, if you still have some left, just a real good idea to maybe cash a little more in if you got any left.
Now tell me what you think about crop conditions across the United States.
Variable, variable, variable would be the best. You know, we got somewhere between 1 and 2 inches of rain over in our area. We didn't have any of the bad storms. Looks really good here. We've been up as way as it goes, talking to people in that stretch over around Bloomington and that area like that. They are drowned out, inundated, flood water standing most a lot of their fields, everything like that. Down in the Mid-South, in the last week, of course, they were skipped on this rain, and the pivots are running heavy, and in the corners where it's dry land is burning up right now. So, and then, of course, you get into the Dakotas, some rain, but not enough rain. Iowa's very spotty. Parts of Iowa got watered well. Parts of Iowa got pretty well missed. A lot of guys here, just for what they pay for their weather thing and that, they can spot a field different places, and they'll spot a field in the middle of Iowa just to see what the rain accumulation is, and they got less than a half inch on a couple of those guys doing that. So very varied as we go around, but you know, it's going to be how many acres the government adds to what they projected in March. But is it, where are those acres at? Are they in the Dakotas? If they are, then the rough time they've had up there might not add as many acres and the production that we've been looking for.
Anything from the grain stocks we should be worried about?
Grain stocks are very, very important too, Todd. I mean, because basically that's going to tell us what the carry-in for next year would be. And it is, that would make our next year's carry-out or either, you know, plus or minus, just on how those are going. Now, the other thing to consider is there is a frost, but not a lot of damaging power to it in what the weathermen say right now. But everybody is looking at reducing the South American crop from where it was last USDA report.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows in the 18 primary corn-producing states of the nation, 4% of the crop has silked. The rolling five-year average, by the way, is 6%. The crop is in 51% good and 13% excellent condition. Last week, that was 54% good and 11% excellent. So while overall the good to excellent fell, it did improve in the excellent category, again by 2 percentage points, from 11% to 13%. 96% of the soybeans have now emerged. The five-year average is 92%. 14% of that crop is blooming. The five-year average is 11%. And like the corn, it got just a little better. While it's still 60% good to excellent in the combined categories over both weeks, 1% of the crop moved from the good category to the excellent category. Winter wheat harvest now 33% complete compared to the 40% five-year average. And the condition of the crop there, 39% good, 9% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 41% and 8%. Now hear the statisticians from Illinois and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Rebecca Alter, statistician for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office. Much-needed precipitation limited Iowa farmers to 3.9 days suitable for field work. Field activities included spraying post-emergence herbicides and harvesting hay. Topsoil moisture levels rated 12% very short, 30% short, 52% adequate, and 6% surplus. Subsoil moisture levels rated 18% very short, 42% short, 37% adequate, and 3% surplus. While precipitation fell across the state during the week, amounts received varied widely, with northwest Iowa still reporting over two-thirds of topsoil moisture short to very short. In contrast, districts in the southern one-third of Iowa rated 60% or more of subsoil moisture adequate to surplus. Farmers reported crops benefited from the rain, but more moisture is needed, especially in the northern two-thirds of the state. There were scattered reports of damaging hail and high winds throughout Iowa. Iowa's corn condition rated 60% good to excellent. Soybean emergence was virtually complete. Across the state, 19% of soybeans were blooming 6 days ahead of the five-year average. There were scattered reports of soybeans setting pods. Soybean condition was rated 58% good to excellent. Pasture condition also improved slightly to 40% good to excellent. Some feedlots were muddy after recent rainfalls. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
This is the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Illinois Crop Progress and Conditions. There were 3.6 days suitable for field work during the week. Statewide, the average temperature was 71 degrees. 2.9 degrees below normal. Precipitation averaged 2.74 inches, that is 1.84 inches above normal. Topsoil moisture supply was rated 7% very short, 10% short, 51% adequate, and 32% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was rated 3% very short, 15% short, 67% adequate, and 15% surplus. Corn condition was rated 1% very poor, 6% poor, 25% fair, 52% good, and 16% excellent. Soybeans emerged reached 96% compared to the 5-year average of 92%. Soybeans blooming reached 8% compared to the 5-year average of 12%. Soybeans condition was rated 1% very poor, 6% poor, 26% fair, 51% good, and 16% excellent. Winter wheat harvested for grain reached 63% compared to the 5-year average of 65%. Winter wheat condition was rated 3% very poor, 3% poor, 13% fair, 44% good, and 37% excellent. Alfalfa hay second cutting was 22% complete compared to the 5-year average of 27%. Pasture and range conditions rated 2% very poor, 6% poor, 29% fair, 45% good, and 18% excellent. This has been Steve Parn with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Our thanks to the statisticians in Illinois and Iowa for their updates of crop progress across those regions. Minnesota's statistician was not available this week, though there was a state report that showed that some areas in Minnesota received scattered precipitation, while others were dry and crop conditions just continued to decline over the week. There were 6.2 days suitable for field work in Minnesota. Topsoil moisture supplies are now rated 28% very short and 47% short. Subsoil moisture levels are 22% very short and 47% short. Corn condition in Minnesota declined to 43% good to excellent compared to the previous week's 50%. Soybeans blooming reached 13%, and that's 3 days ahead of last year and 6 days ahead of the average. And the condition of the soybean crop declined to 45% good to excellent compared to the previous week's 53%. Spring wheat was 95% jointed, the same as last year, but 4 days ahead of the average, and the wheat crop had headed to 84%. That's 8 days ahead of last year and 10 days ahead of the rolling 5-year average. The spring wheat declined to 29% good to excellent compared to the previous week's 48%. And that's a look at the agricultural conditions across Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. You know, by the end of the day tomorrow, WILL will need everything in the bank that it's going to spend for the coming fiscal year, which starts July 1st for us. We sure could use your help right now if you'd like to pledge your support. You can do that at willpledge.org, willpledge.org, or 217-244-9455. Help us put some money in the bank. We'll spend it in the coming year. If we don't have it, we don't spend it, and we sure do appreciate it when you help us out. Either way, let them know that you're supporting agriculture, either by telling them or putting it in the comments section. And thank you. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the U of I, to discuss his pinnings for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find them at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. A couple of articles. We'll talk about seed cost for corn in particular in just a few moments, but let's start with the commodity titles, ARC and PLC. And the payments that producers might expect from last year's crop. You wrote about this last week. It's up on that Farm Doc Daily website now. Thanks for being with us, by the way, Gary. Can you tell me what you found?
Yeah, so we're looking at the 2020 ARC and PLC payments, which will be received this October. And again, what we're waiting for is to know what the projected or the market year average price will be, and FSA also hasn't released the yields yet. But at this point in time, you can be pretty sure that corn and soybeans will not make a payment. 2020 market year average prices likely will be $4.35 for corn, $11.25 for soybeans. Both of those are well above the effective reference prices, and there won't be any PLC payments. And you'll have to have extremely low low county yields for ARC and PLC to make payments on corn and soybeans. And so it's not, well, that's always a possibility. It's not likely for 2020. Wheat will be making a payment. Our estimate of the PLC payment rate is 45 cents per base bushel. So a nice payment for wheat will be coming, but corn and soybeans not likely.
Yeah, and these are the three primary program crops, but there are others as well that will be making payments. And you have a nice little chart on the Farm Doc Daily website that puts numbers out for peanuts and barley and lentils and canola and all kinds of things.
Yep, all the covered crops are covered there. So if you want to know what those covered crops look like, go to our Farm Doc Daily for last week.
And this week, you write about the historical relationship between seed corn cost and what? I suppose price in Chicago.
Yeah, so, well, actually, what we did was we looked at the seed corn costs and two things. The first is what the expected revenue from corn is. And generally speaking, the higher the expected revenue, seed costs tend to rise during those periods. We have been seeing rising expected revenue in both 2020 and 2021, and that would lead us to believe that seed cost will be rising in 2022. Also, over time, seed costs have been just increasing on a per acre basis, and that's likely due to improvements in hybrids and varieties for soybeans, and those improvements lead to higher seed prices and higher seed cost.
You looked back over the history of this. Are there any interesting factoids you gleaned?
Yeah, so we looked at this from 1975 through the current period. Perhaps one of the most interesting things is that seed cost per acre as a percent of expected gross revenue per acre have been increasing over time. It started at roughly 4%. In 1975, so in 1975, seed cost as a percent of expected revenue was 4%. Now we're over 10%. So the share of gross revenue going to seed cost have increased over time.
Do we know why that share has increased?
Yeah, that's always a good question. So we've seen increases in obviously genetic potential and biotechnology. There could be some substitution away from tillage and herbicide costs because of some of the biotechnological technical traits. So those would play a factor. And there is the fact that there has been a considerable concentration within the seed industry. And now we're looking at three companies and controlling all the biotechnology and a lot of the genetics. So from many to a few. So that might also be playing a role as well.
What can farmers expect in the way of an increase this fall?
So just historically, and we looked at this as on a national basis, $6 to $7 per acre would be what we would expect on an average basis. You can expect sort of the highest yielding varieties, if you're looking at some of the better varieties, to have a higher increase than that. So, but $6 to $7, $6 to $10 would probably cover what's going to happen on an average basis. And then depending on what hybrids are being purchased, that could go larger.
Now, I know you've said this several years in a row, maybe close to a decade, but by the time we get to that point at which farmers will need to re-up cash rents, it's likely because of higher prices, they'll have higher cash rents again next year too.
Yeah, so we've had a good income year in 2020. It looks like 2021, depending on what happens to yields, but the prices are set up to have a good revenue year. And so far, 2022, you'd be building in higher than average prices, and all of those things would then lead to increasing cash rents.
In the past, you've cautioned against that. Are the better incomes worth the increases, in your opinion?
Yeah, so that's always the thing. So, what we typically see is cost rise during periods of higher income, which is sort of what you would expect, but they never come down as much during periods of lower prices. So I'm still sort of the opinion you're looking at below $4 per bushel corn to be the long run average, and something below, you know, $9 to $9.50 for a soybean price. And economics over the long run will have to be match that, even though we're looking at higher prices than that now. So overshooting of those costs and cash rents are what gets concerning.
Have you compared recently, I want to stick with you for just a second, the differences between leases, whether it's cash rent, share rent, or even ownership?
So what we've seen, actually, what the big thing that we've seen in central Illinois over time is the switch from share rent to cash rent. That's been slowly switching to cash rent. Cash rents reached a high in 2013, 2014, and then it decreased slightly. But the reductions haven't matched the decrease in prices. So we were on high productivity land in central Illinois. We were close to $300 in 2013, 2014. Now we're probably closer to $275 on an average basis. And so we'll see what those do in 2022 or 22 production.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can always read more from Gary Schnitke most Tuesdays on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now let me take you through some of the historical perspective as it relates to climate, because Don Day from Day Weather is not available to us today. This from the United States Department of Agriculture in its weekly crop weather summary. According to the preliminary data, it says, provided by the National Centers for Environmental Information, the contiguous U.S. experienced its 21st warmest and 42nd driest spring during the 127-year period on record. Across the lower 48 states, the March to May average temperature was 52.6 degrees. That's 1.7 degrees above the 20th century mean, while precipitation averaged 7.53 inches, 95% of normal. It was the nation's driest spring since 2006. It goes on to say that spring warmth was most prominent in the north and the west, while wetness was largely focused on an area stretching from the central and southern plains into the lower Mississippi Valley. Top 10 rankings for spring warmth were confined to Michigan and four Atlantic coast states from Delaware to Maine. Meanwhile, state precipitation rankings range from the second driest spring in Idaho, Oregon, and Washington to the fourth wettest spring in Louisiana. California and Michigan also experienced a top 10 ranking for spring dryness. And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.